In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
What's the difference between a poll and a scientific poll? You see polls cited all the time in the media, but you know, there are a lot of times that they use those polls to prop up something that they're trying to push. I've seen this a lot lately with TV stations that post something on X and ask a question, but it's pretty clear they don't want results, they want a narrative. Back in August, KATU had a poll, should sanctuary cities comply with federal immigration enforcement? A real tell that they were trying to make sure they got the results they wanted is they left that poll open for 30 days. Como News up in Seattle asked, should English be a requirement to obtain a commercial driver's license? That one was open for 114 days. Clearly, they have some results they want. One of the key differences between a poll and a scientific poll is that with a scientific poll, you know who is taking it. Name, contact information, perhaps demographics you're targeting, but you know who they are. One reason is because you want to make sure they're not voting more than once. With online polls, you can vote multiple times. So I guess using that standard, you could say that Oregon's elections are not scientific. Ballots are mailed out. We don't know who gets them. We don't know who fills out the ballots. And things like ID don't matter because they may not even be a real person. Or they might be dead. And they keep the elections open until well after election day. Maybe they're trying to get the results they want. You can't trust online polls. And with what Oregon is doing, it makes it hard to trust Oregon's elections. To talk about that, I would like to welcome the Johnny Appleseed of Election Integrity, Dr. Douglas Frank, who has been fighting for election reform since December of 2020. Dr. Frank, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be with you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you reminded us, actually, that we talked to you about 3 years ago, but we've had a lot of people join us since then. So let's actually kind of start with an introduction. Your staff did send us a bio. It says here that you're a world-renowned physicist, inventor, and Nobel Prize nominee. Wow. What was the Nobel nomination for?
It was in a field of science known as surface electroanalytical chemistry. Basically, what it studies the way that molecules behave when they're near surfaces, and that's my specialty. And I made a major discovery in 1990. It made me world famous, got me nominated, as you mentioned, I discovered a new technique for imaging, making three-dimensional images of molecules at surfaces. It's the first time we've been able to do that. Hmm. And it's sort of like having, you know, it's like the first person who invented the microscope. You know, wow, what can you do? You can look at small things. Well, suddenly we had the ability to look at the way molecules are behaving near surfaces. That was a big deal. Made the cover of Science magazine, Nature magazine around the world. So I became known. It gave me credibility. And I began doing consulting around the world with various labs and whatnot. And so I'm a real scientist. And that's how I got my start. But really, to be honest, even though I'm a scientist in my heart, in practical application, I'm a numbers guy. I'm a modeling guy. I like building models around things that I observe and then making predictions and doing analysis with those models. And then elections are no exception. There are a lot of data. And I love crunching those data, building models, and then making predictions and doing analyses and discovering fraud and everything. So that's the connection between my science and elections.
Well, even though it's been a while since we've talked to you, we've talked about you several times. In particular, we've brought you up when talking about the Tim Sipple case that you were set to be the expert witness on. As I recall, the state of Oregon's election division and the Secretary of State and Washington County, they all did not want you to testify. And I believe their justification was, well, it was because you didn't have a political degree and therefore you couldn't understand the math, which seems kind of an odd argument.
Funny. Yeah, it was funny. It was like a trial within a trial. I took the stand, they swore me in, and then the prosecution objected and said, this guy can't testify as an election expert. He doesn't have a degree in political science. And so they brought in this guy from Stanford. professor there who testified, well, yeah, he's an expert in science, he's an expert in math and statistics, but he's not an expert in elections, so he shouldn't be allowed to testify on as an expert in elections. And the judge ruled that. So I was able to talk about all the numbers, but not about elections. But since then, I've since re-engaged that gentleman in a public debate, 3.5 hours, and wiped the floor with him in Coos County. You can look it up on YouTube. They've got it. Up as a public hearing. The Coos County, Oregon commissioners invited me in for a public debate, and it was a fun day because I got to basically show that all my evidence is incontrovertible. And in fact, it was funny. He was trying to argue against it, and all he did was confirm it. So it was a great day. Anyway, it was still an important case, though.
I absolutely agree. It was an important case. I am curious, what was his justification as to why there couldn't possibly be any election fraud? Or wasn't that his argument?
Well, he was saying, well, look, Dr. Frank has done this statistical analysis where he says he can predict every county in the state after only studying one of them. Well, that couldn't happen because of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And he listed all these different reasons statistically why that wouldn't be possible. And so then I would just walk up to the microphone and show the graphs on the screen and say, well, I predicted all these. And you notice that I'm predicting them to part per million accuracy. You know, so you say I can't do it, but here it is. And then the next thing, you know, he was saying, well, gee, Dr. Frank says the voter rolls are all dirty and that there's this fraud, but that isn't justified. And here are the reasons. And he gave all the reasons, logical reasons. And that was a beautiful portion of the public debate, because then the head commissioner interrupted him partway through. And he says, well, you know, his name is Rod Taylor. He says, I was originally skeptical of Dr. Frank's work, too. So I asked him, and he gave me a list of 20 addresses. And me and my wife went out on a Sunday afternoon and knocked on doors, and we found exactly what Dr. Frank showed us. The first 7 out of 7 houses had phantom voters at it, just like he told us. So, you know, you say there isn't any, but Dr. Frank has produced the evidence. And so that was beautiful to have that on the record. So, you know, it was a good day for me. We each gave a 35-minute presentation and then 2 hours of public debate. It was awesome. And it was Justin Grimmer's his name. He's the one that they tried out, you know, like when CNN did a hit piece on me several years ago. He's the one they tried out to give the opposing point of view. That makes sense.
It does make sense. Although people thinking that somehow our voter rolls couldn't possibly be dirty. I just don't believe that. All right. Let's go and take a break there. Coming back, I'd like to pick that up with you about that Washington case. Everyone stay with us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Dirty voter rolls lead to dirty elections. And we're talking about that today with Dr. Douglas Frank. He's a world-renowned physicist and Nobel Prize nominee who has been finding problems with voter rolls, not just in Oregon, but all across the nation. So I'd like to pick up with that Washington case here, because I've had a lot of suspicions about why the state was so adamant that Tim Sybil could not have access to that database. And my own personal suspicion is that, you know, the state was saying, well, it's proprietary information. Well, it's a database that should be public information. And a database is simply names and numbers, addresses, number of times voting, that sort of thing, voter ID, of course. But it would be proprietary if how that database is being accessed, that I would see is proprietary. Is that how you saw that as well?
Well, I was allowed to see the data. I signed an NDA. I was brought in as an expert witness on that. So I've seen everything that Tim Sybil was given in that situation. And if you remember the origins of that, Tim and Janice Deisinger from Multnomah County were asking for copies of the voter rolls for Washington County. And the county clerk mistakenly, well, first of all, the county clerk denied, said, no, we're not going to give it to you. And then they went to the DA, and the DA said, no, state law is you have to provide it. So then the clerk said, okay, I'll provide it. So she accidentally gave Tim Sybil a complete backup of the EMS, the election management system. That's not just the voter rolls. That's the complete, all the software, all the ballot images, everything. I mean, he has a complete backup of everything. I've seen it with my own eyes. So that when the state found out, your Secretary of State found out that he had that, they panicked. And she had the Attorney General of your state file a restraining order so that he couldn't share any of that information in public. Now, the voter roll aspect of it, the original public records request for that, that's perfectly legal. That is certainly available. In fact, any citizen can go on right now and onto the Secretary of State website and order a copy of that. That's perfectly fine to distribute publicly. But the other parts would be private. And so we argued in the case that he should be entitled to use the voter rolls, but they even restrained him from that. He wasn't allowed to share anything of any of that. So that's what the case is about.
That's just so extremely suspicious, because the data is data, but how you access that, again, that's, I think, the key issue. So as far as the election management is concerned, if all it is just counting, why would they care?
I know why they care. And they even said so in the restraining order. They said, if this information becomes public, then it compromises the security of our elections. And this is almost a direct quote, because our machines are accessible wirelessly if you have this information.
Oh, but we've been told that's not true.
Oh, there you go. What you've been told is a very carefully crafted phrase. The phrase says,
well,
the
see,
machines
I would use
are not
the word
connected
lie
to
in
the
that
internet.
Case.
Yeah. Yes. They say that the machines are not connected to the internet, but that doesn't mean that they aren't wirelessly accessible. And so everybody, it's sort of like what the definition of is, when actually the machines are very much accessible, especially if you have the information. And we have the information. And what was a beautiful moment in the trial, we had the clerk in the witness stand, and she was feeling a little defensive because she had made this error and accidentally given him the whole backup. And she said, well, I understand my system. Everybody thinks that I'm not technically competent. I understand it just fine. She says, I've been training my replacement, because she was going to retire that year. She says, and I can even turn the modems on myself, and I don't even need a password. And she said that right in the witness stand. It was a brilliant moment. And these are all the machines that are behind the quote unquote air gap, which you're never supposed to be able to penetrate. But she turns on the machine's modems behind the air gap every night. And she admitted it in the court case. So it was a beautiful moment. It's not like this is up for debate. Everybody knows the machines can go online, but they're not illegally allowed to. So there you go.
Wow.
Yep. That's why they were afraid. That's why they were saying this can't be made public. And they admitted it in the public restraining order. The AG says, yeah, because they can be accessed wirelessly.
Wow.
So there you go.
Wow. Okay, so we could probably talk a whole show just about that one, but you have an event coming up in, actually you're in Oregon now and you're headed to some events, but you've got another one coming up September 11th that I'd like to talk to you about later. But in terms of your investigations here in Oregon and your overall investigation into election fraud, because, you know, there's a lot of different slices to that particular pie. What is your unique focus when it comes to election integrity?
Well, there are a lot of people out there that are talking about what's wrong with our elections and the way our elections should be. And they're not wrong. You know, there are people out there saying, you know, there's fraud here, there's fraud there. Our machines are a problem. Like Mr. Lindell is always wanting to, you know, melt the machines down and make it into prison bars.
Right.
And all these people are right. They're not wrong. But there are very few people doing what I'm doing. What I'm doing is teaching you how to get from where we are now to there. You know, so it's sort of like one thing for the people to say, we want an audit, or we want to get rid of the machine, we want to get rid of mail-in voting or whatever. That's fine. But the question is how do you get from here to there? And that's the strategy that I've refined and been developing all over the country. And I call it the 7 steps. And I've been teaching that. Well, I've been doing that now in Oregon for about 3 years. And I've got about a dozen counties that have been implementing that. And we're about to emerge. It's why I'm here. I'm here for about 10 days here in Oregon on this trip. Basically, I'm going to be focusing on the eastern side of the state. I've already got the western side of the state pretty much in line. And what we've been doing is county by county, I've been teaching people how to find fraud in their own elections. So you're not saying, well, gee, Dr. Frank says this, Mr. Lindell says that, Seth Cashel says such and so, or Mark Cook says that. I'm teaching people how in their own counties, they can find fraud themselves. And by fraud, I mean real fraud. Mm-hmm. For example, I was in Washington County yesterday going over their list, and they've found around 20 people so far that they found more than that, but we have about 20 cases that we fully documented. People who are dead, they've been dead over a decade. We have all the documentation proving they're dead, yet they're voting in every election. Okay, so how is that possible? Well, that means that somebody's cheating the system.
Well, I think some of that is just simply because Oregon is so inclusive, we would hate to exclude dead people from voting. So
let's
go ahead and take a break there, because this is going to take a lot to uncover. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Dr. Douglas Frank. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Today we're talking about dirty voter rolls, and we're doing that with Dr. Douglas Frank, who has been analyzing voter rolls across the nation and right here in Oregon. But he doesn't just uncover things, he also gives people tools they can use to find fraud in their own elections. So just to get back to what you were saying there, that you have found already cases of voter fraud within Washington County, 20 cases of people that were dead and yet have been voting. So how many times have they voted?
In one case I was looking at yesterday, they voted about 10 times since they've been dead.
Mm-hmm. So that's 20 years of fraud then for those particular voters.
Yeah. And the key problem is that you have two problems in Oregon. The first problem is your voter rolls are super dirty. On average, about 30% of the people in your rolls don't belong there, but you're mailing ballots to all of them. So think about it. For every two ballots you mail to real people, you're mailing a ballot to someone that you shouldn't be. So you're basically littering the pavement with ballots. And then those ballots come in. And, you know, some of those are dead people. Some of those are people that have moved away. Some of them are people that are homeless and the ballot never makes it to them. But somebody is collecting these ballots and turning them in using those names. And that's the problem with your mail-in system. So what I do is I help people find those cases. And dead voters are just one example.
Okay. So let's get back to that, because it's interesting that you mentioned 30%, because that's a number that keeps coming up in my own personal experiences and looking at some of these other allegations of election fraud. I think it was the 2012 election, if I remember correctly. And I had been given a list from the Marion County Republicans where I was living at the time. And it was 100 people. And so they said, you know, call all these people. And it was a get out the vote effort. You know, don't forget to turn in your ballot,
sure,
you know, and so on and so forth. Well, about 30% of those were out of date.
They weren't there.
They were either dead in some cases. I think about 10 to 15% of them were dead. And the rest of them had moved. One guy said that, you know, those were his daughters, his kids that I was calling for, because I had multiple people at that one particular address. He said they haven't lived here in years, like 10 years or more. And yet this was allegedly a current list from Marion County. So is that what you see nationwide or just here in Oregon, that 30%?
It varies state to state. You're among, and we talked about this before the program, you're among the dirtiest in the state. A clean voter rolls would have about 60 to 70% of the voting age population in the rolls. That would be a clean voter rolls. Oregon's at about 100 to 105% for the state. And it varies county by county, but Marion's one of the dirtier counties as well. You're about one in three of the people in the rolls don't belong there. You know, there are other states that are better or worse than that. And a lot of times people say, well, this is the reason Oregon is in such a bad shape is because the Democrats are in charge. Nope, this is not a Republican-Democrat issue. Kentucky has got about 105% of their people registered, you know, and they're a red state. And it's not about Republican-Democrat. The core problem is that your voter rolls are not controlled by your local clerk. They're centrally controlled.
Yes.
And that's the problem. And most of the states are in that situation where the local people aren't in charge anymore. So, of course, they're dirty, because the local people have the local knowledge and the state doesn't have the local knowledge. In your state, you've jobbed it out to an organization known as ERIC, E-R-I-C,
yes.
Election Registration Information Center. And that's an NGO. And they used to be in about 30 states. Now they're back only in about 20 states.
Yeah,
your state doesn't even do the work. Go ahead.
Right. Well, I want to come back to that, because I had seen that in another presentation that you had done and about them being an NGO. Just to back up, I wanted to clarify, you said that a clean voter roll would be about 60% of the population, and that's because they're not old enough or just choose not to be in the voter rolls. Is that correct?
That's part of it. there are people that are moving out and moving in. And so, you know, a clean voter rolls is about 60%. But if you were around 70%, that would be normal because there's like stuff happening in real time, right? You might be in the rolls today and you move tomorrow. Well, you'll still be in the rolls, but there takes time for it to clean up. So,
okay.
And so, you know, the cleanest, like, for example, Wyoming has the cleanest voter rolls, and they have a law. If you miss an election, they take you off the rolls.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and here in Oregon, it can be several cycles before they finally decide to get around to even sending you a notice. Hey, you haven't voted in a while. Are you still there?
Exactly. And so that's what happens, is it just kind of accumulates as being really dirty. But some people, yeah, just don't want to be in the rolls. They don't want to vote. And a lot of the rural areas, people are like, you know, just leave me alone. I'm a, you know, libertarian. I don't want to get involved. Right. Leave me alone. And so they just stay out of the rolls. They're like Mennonites and Jehovah's Witnesses. And
sure.
A lot of these religious groups, they just don't want to be in the rolls. They don't want to have any part of it. And then people that don't want to vote, they just don't come in and register. Well, you've defeated that, because anybody gets a driver's license is automatically put in your rolls. And so there are a lot of people who've been registered and they don't even know they're registered because
yes.
They've just been put into the rolls.
Yeah.
But so that's why it's about, you know, historically, you can look at the historical records for our country for decades and decades. You'll see that about 60 to 70% is a healthy voter rolls of the voting age population.
Yeah. So to back up a little bit again, you had mentioned these cases there in Washington County where 20 dead people were voting. There are other instances, you know, like in the past, we have talked with Peter Tichtin and his group there, and they have found these clone voters is kind of the popular term. They like to use modified duplicates. I personally prefer undocumented duplicates in the voter rolls. But so as far as those people being there, whether they're dead or, you know, not actually, you know, the ghost voters, how do they get ballots and how do they vote? Because that has to be sent to an address that somebody allegedly at that address is then casting a vote.
Right. And that's a distinction between my work and the work you just described. There are a lot of people that make accusations about the voter rolls, but they don't do the due diligence. For example, when I say there's a dead voter, we go knock on the door and we prove that that person is dead. When you have these duplicate voters, it's one thing to say that there's a duplicate voter in the rolls. Did they vote or not? And then if you think they voted, prove they did. So in other words, I take it steps beyond this. It's dirty voter rolls is not fraud. Fraud is when someone votes who wasn't supposed to vote.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. And so there's that extra obvious, and dead voters are just the simplest of that, right? They're dead. Obviously they couldn't have voted. Somebody else must have cast a ballot. But then the next most common one is, you know, someone moves to Texas, but they're still in the Oregon rolls and they're voting in Texas now. And how do we know? Because I have a copy of the Texas voter rolls and I have their history, and yet they're also still voting in Oregon. And it's typically not them. It's somebody else using their name or their ballot. So we take it that extra step. It's not just, are there duplicate voters in the rolls? Are they voting? And if they are, you got to prove it. Mm. And so that's what's different about what I do. Because if you just do the first thing, there are always excuses that your county can use. Oh, that's just a computer glitch. Oh, yeah, that's just the way we do records here or whatever.
Well, and they never use the excuse.
No fraud here.
They never use the real excuses. We're just flipping incompetent. Somehow that never comes up. Okay, let's go take a break right there. We'll be back with Dr. Douglas Frank talking about election integrity. Stay with us. Get to clean voter rolls, it's not just a matter of removing people who shouldn't be there. It's deeper than that. And we're talking today to Dr. Douglas Frank, who is in Oregon, putting on some events to give people steps they can do to find voter fraud in their own elections. So I'd like to get back to this notion of how these fraudulent voters in the voter rolls are able to cast their votes. So if, like for example, for Oregon, all of the ballots are mailed out. That is completely unsecure. You have no idea who is actually getting that ballot, who is actually filling out that ballot. And allegedly there's a signature, but sometimes those signatures don't match and they count it anyway. So as far as the other ones that aren't dead, how are those fraudulent voters casting votes? Is it, especially if they have to show up in person?
The simplest way to cheat an election is to keep track of what the tally is and who's voted. And then if you're behind, you say, gee, who hasn't voted yet? We'll cast a ballot using that person's name. And if you've been doing this for several years, you'll have a list of everybody who's dead, who is still in the rolls. You'll have a list of everybody who doesn't, has a low propensity for voting, and you'll be able to cast ballots for them. And there are people that make a living doing this. If you saw the movie 2000 Mules, that's basically the final step of that process. But non-government organizations, and we've proven this all around the country, make a living doing this. They get paid to stuff ballots, and it's actually cheaper to stuff ballots than it is to campaign. So if you're trying to win an election, you just need to track it. Now people then say, well, how do you track it? Aha, that's where the electronic systems come in. And that's why it's so important that to those who want to cheat, that they keep the machines, because the machines are reporting the tallies in real time. And that's how you know where you stand at any given point in time. And then also the county provides the parties, for example, lists of everybody who's voted in real time. And that's part of the deal. You know, well, okay, well, we'll cooperate with the party, but the party gets all this information. Well, it's not just them who has the access. Anybody who wants to cheat the election can gain access to the list of who's voted so far, because all of that's recorded in multiple ways. It's recorded through the post office, and it's also recorded at the clerk's office. So there are these digital lists. So if you want to cheat, let's say you're behind 8 to 10. Well, you look up 4 people who haven't voted yet and cast ballots for them. And you'd say, well, gee, but they have signature verification. Well, except that you've given away the signatures to an outside non-government organization known as ERIC. And they're not the only ones who have it. I also have it. How can I get it? Well, because all this stuff's available in multiple digital ways. And so, you know, we've got several examples I could go into. It's hard to do on the radio, but where I could show you where there's what's called a ballot mill. You just have a bunch of people sitting around filling out ballots and a computer telling you who to fill them out for. And that shows you a picture of the signature. You approximate the signature and drop them in a box. The mules come and pick them up and drop them off. It's quite straightforward to cheat.
So in terms of the paid ballot stuffers and filler outers, do you have actual like video evidence of them doing that?
Yes.
So why aren't there, and have they been investigated?
So the way I answer this question is, remember in 2020, November, who was president?
It would've
Trump
been,
was.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The day after the election, he ordered the Justice Department to do an investigation. 3,000 federal agents spread out over the country gathering evidence. I have sat in skiff rooms with these agents, and they've shown me the photographs. They've shown me videotape. Here's something that you don't even have to believe me, because you can look it up yourself. Do you remember about 2 months ago, Kash Patel released evidence that had been collected in October of 2020, where 1 million fake driver's licenses had been created and 1 million corresponding ballots had been produced that were captured by the FBI?
Right. Yeah. Those are the ones being imported from China, correct?
Exactly.
Yes.
That's 1 million of them. Okay. Now, if you think about it, those are all ready to stuff. And so all you need to know is what the tally is and who's not voted. And you've got the license with the signature on it and you've got the ballot. So you could have a person go into the polls and show their license and turn it in. That would be one way. Pay a homeless person $20 and they'll do it. Or you could, in your case, all you have to do is copy the signature onto a ballot and drop it in a drop box or drop it in the mail. So, in other words, that's a proven case, publicly available, that anybody can check out. But I've seen in private rooms, I've met with federal investigators who've shown me pictures of ballot mills where this exact thing is going on. Somebody, you could also look up if you wanted, during the 2020 election, you might remember, they arrested a United States Postal Service contractor who was driving 200,000 completed ballots already filled out in envelopes, ready to drop off in drop boxes from the state of New York to Pennsylvania. You can look that up. So, I mean, those are publicly become known cases. How about that? But I'm aware of several private ones where I've seen with my own eyes pictures of these ballot mills. And then the movie 2000 Mules kind of shows you what it looks like after the ballot mill, where the ballot mules are dropping off the ballots at the drop boxes. So that's, you asked how? That's how.
Does that only work in states that allow mail-in ballots?
No.
How does it work then when they have to be cast in person? Because, I mean, if somebody shows up with a license, is it the same picture of the same person in multiple licenses that they can then vote in multiple locations? How does that work in person?
Well, I agree it's tougher, and that's why we want single-day voting in person. But you got to realize there's also UOCAVA. That's foreign citizens. There's also the military ballot. There are always mail-in ballots in every election everywhere because we allow, for example, our military people to vote, and they deserve to vote. We should allow that. But there's fraud coming in that way as well. Then there are also situations where there are corrupt people in the elections who are inserting ballots. Extra ballots. And that's one of the reasons why we do reconciliation, where we say, well, gee, County X reports that 100 people voted, but yet we only have 90 ballots received here. Who are the other 10, you know? And so you do reconciliation in audits. And what I've learned is that, for example, in Ohio, where we don't do mail-in ballots as the predominant means, still to this day, about 30% of the ballots are coming in by mail. So that's the loophole, the primary loophole through which it happens. But there's also electronic cheating that's going on. You know, for example, on election night in 2020, everybody's seen that graph of the state of Michigan where the graph goes up and then suddenly jumps straight up and, yes. and then continues on. That graph, I was in that lawsuit. It was Bill Bailey was the plaintiff and Matt DiPerno was the attorney. I was in that lawsuit in Antrim, Michigan. That represents 156,000 new voters that were added to the voter rolls at 11 p.m. at night.
Wow.
And all of them voted. And we requested a list of the addresses, names and addresses for those people, because we were going to go knock on those doors and meet those amazing people that suddenly appeared on the rolls. And the Secretary of State, Widmer, she said, no, it's going to take us 2 years to prepare that list. So the judge ordered it, but we never got to see that list. So that would be a case where the ballots were stuffed electronically. And we even have videotape 4 hours later of a truck backing up to the building with a pallet of ballots corresponding to those names that were added.
Wow.
So in other words, you say it's in person, but there are other ways to cheat. Mm. There are other loopholes, other yeah. ways to get the ballots into the system. And it's why we need to restore local yeah. control of our elections.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Let's go and take a break there. Come back and we talk more about that evidence. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, and we're talking today to Dr. Douglas Frank, who has been analyzing voter rolls across the nation and right here in Oregon, and has uncovered some rather surprising conclusions, although maybe I should say collusions, about our elections. Be sure to visit iSpyRadio.com/15-36 for this week's show page. We'll have some resources for you down in the show notes section, and one of which is more information about his event coming up September 17th in Benton County. So, Dr. Frank, I'd like to return to this notion of the evidence that you have seen. You mentioned in the skiff there recently. Well, let's actually start there. So you've seen that evidence. How soon or even can we expect to see any of that in the public realm? Are they ever going to release that evidence?
My experience, keep in mind, I've been doing this every day of my life for 4 years. I've sat in secretaries of state's office and hacked into their elections right in front of their faces. Hmm. You all know about the Tiener Peters case. That's
yes,
my work.
Yes, yep.
The situation in Lake County, Ohio, where we brought in a penetration tester and hacked into the election during the election, added Mickey Mouse to the ballot, flip ballots, do all kinds of stuff, present all that evidence to the Secretary of State, Frank LaRose. Nothing happens except they bring in the FBI, investigate. Nothing's found. We didn't do anything illegal. So in other words, everybody says,
just
well,
to be clear,
where's the
evidence? You said that when they bring in the FBI, it's not to investigate the fraud and the election machines and how hackable they are. They're investigating you?
Correct.
Wow.
And in other words, the reason they're persecuting, and I use persecuting, not prosecuting, the reason they're persecuting Tina Peters is to scare all the other clerks
oh, yes.
into compliance.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And so this is about central control of our elections by our states. They like having central control. They like me, and they like, and when does government not give up its central control once it has it? And so this is a fight between
Well, there
the
was
people.
That one time back in 1776.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where we're coming to the head now. We're coming to that.
It feels like so that. I hope we don't have to get there, but yeah.
What happens is when you have evidence like this, let's say you want to go to court and make it public, the case will be dismissed based upon standing mm-hmm. because you don't have standing when you have this kind of evidence. You have to be harmed in order to have standing. If I beat somebody up, you can't sue me for it. The person who I beat up can sue me for it. They're the ones with standing.
But as far as standing is concerned, Trump himself had sued and the court said, oh, you don't have standing either. I mean, that's just bizarre.
He didn't sue. No, that's not correct.
Sue. Understanding that he had.
Seven secretaries of states put a case together against the state of Pennsylvania back in 2021, and it was rejected on standing because they didn't have standing. The attorneys general
right, yeah,
did,
I remember that one.
Which is why I then flew around the country with Mike Lindell for about 6 weeks collecting signatures from AGs. And then we were going to take that case to the Supreme Court and put all this evidence in, including all the whistleblowers and evidence we've been talking about. Guess who stopped that? Because we had six attorneys general signed onto that case. The weekend before we were dropping that, it was the weekend before Thanksgiving 2021, Ronna McDaniels, head of the RNC, called every one of those AGs and said, if you stay on that case, you lose all support from the Republican National Committee. So our enemy is not the Democrat.
Yeah, well, it's often internal, that's for sure.
It's the Republican Party itself is our biggest opposition to election reform. And now that the Democrats are in the hole, maybe they'll wake up again like they did in 2017 when Hillary Clinton hired Professor Halderman to and his graduate students to prove that the elections were insecure. So in other words, for 4 years, the Democrats were screaming bloody murder. Then for 4 years, the Republicans have been. Well, what are we going to do? Keep screaming back and forth, or are we going to fix the problem?
Yeah.
And so that's where I come in. I teach counties how to fix the problem.
Let's cover that in the next segment there with you. As far as that evidence, because besides this gift, the information that you have seen, it was reported about 3, maybe 4 weeks ago now that Kash Patel had uncovered evidence about the 2024 election. It was the 2020 election.
It's also October of 2020.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was evidence that he had found in burn bags stashed there in the FBI building. Do you know anything about that evidence, and do you think any of that will be released?
Yes, he's announcing the presence of it.
But in terms of seeing the evidence, do you think we will actually see that evidence? And do you have any idea what it is that he's talking about?
Yeah, he's talking about 1 million fake driver's licenses and 1 million fake ballots. That's just one example. There are several more that we have of ballot mills.
Yeah. Can you go into some more of those examples?
I can only speak about them in general because of my confidentiality. It's sort of like, I testified in the Tim Sipple case and I had to sign an NDA, but I was given access to everything. For example, in that case, we showed that in Washington County, the voters are not anonymous. They thought that their ballots were anonymous. They're not. I can tell you how every person voted on every issue because I can see their ballot and their names essentially on it in the form of a QR code. They just didn't. So I saw all that stuff. I can talk about that in public. Why? Because it's been in court case and been elucidated in court. I can't talk about the specifics of what I've seen in these skiff runs, but I can talk about it in general. And so that's why I make these allusions to the when they've leaked to the public, because then you've got to see, it's the fact that Kash Patel has revealed it in public. The fact that the guy from the postal worker from driving the 200,000 ballots from New York to Pennsylvania, that's been made public. But for example, I could tell you, I could make a general reference to something that there was a huge ballot mill that was preparing ballots for Maricopa County. And I've seen pictures of that with my own eyes.
And that was the 2020 election or just?
Yeah, 2020.
Okay. All right, let's go and take a break here. Coming back, we will talk about once you've uncovered the fraud, what to do about it. Stay with us.
Hey,
And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Dr. Douglas Frank talking about election integrity. And so I want to move quickly into this. You know, once you've uncovered this, what do you do with it? Because I don't want that to get lost. So what do you do once you've uncovered that fraud?
Yes. So I think most people know there are problems with their elections, but most people don't know what to do about it. And so everybody's expecting President Trump to fix it, or everybody's expecting the law, the courts to fix it, or everybody's expecting the legislature to fix it, or everybody's expecting, let's do end vote by mail, that'll fix it. And what I've learned, because I've been doing this now every day around the country, is that those things are important, but they're not going to fix the problem. The core problem is that the local county is no longer in charge of their own elections. You know, I just came from Alabama, for example, and it's very similar to Oregon's situation, where the clerks themselves, in order to work on their voter rolls, they log into a database that's not even in their state.
Wow.
It's in Omaha, Nebraska. It's ESNS. And so, in other words, the local voter rolls are not controlled by the local people, the tallying. You know, like you'll talk to people who work in precincts. They'll say, "Gee, Dr. Frank, you know, I don't see how there could be any fraud. I sat there and watched all day, and we tallied everything up and added it up and turned in the numbers. How could there be any cheating in that?" And I said, "Well, what did you do with the numbers after you turned them in? Did you verify that the numbers reported to the Secretary of State matched the numbers you turned in?" And they'll say, "Well, no, we don't even know how to do that." And so, in other words, the system is not being controlled by us anymore. It all goes into black boxes. It's turned around somewhere and it's spit out somewhere else. And so you've lost, not only in Oregon have you lost chain of custody of your ballots when you mail them out, but you've lost control and auditability and transparency of the entire process. So there are like multiple locations where it can be cheated. So the solution is bring it back local, under your local eyes, under your local control. How do you do that? You need to show that the system is defrauding you of your constitutional rights. Once you've done that, it's a civil rights issue, and your local county can say, we're not going to follow the state policy anymore, because following the state policy compromised our constitutional rights. And the beautiful thing about what's happening right now in Oregon is you're being sued by the Judicial Watch.
Yes.
Who's showing that your voter rolls are out of compliance with federal law and state law, and they are. It's open and shut case. And so once that ruling comes down, guess what? The counties then can say, hey, we're not going to use the state system. It's been proven in court. They're out of compliance. It's a beautiful moment. It's coming together. So what I've been doing is going around and teaching counties teaching teams and training teams. I call it the seven steps, training them how to find fraud in their own elections. That's what gives them standing. When you can go to your county leaders and say, look, here's the fraud. These are actual fraud cases. I'm not showing statistics. I'm not showing you dirty voter rolls. I'm showing you actual fraud that's happening in our elections because of this state system. We demand you no longer use the state system anymore. It's out of compliance with federal and state law. It's defrauding of our constitutional rights. And by the way, we've got the sheriff standing right here who interposes on our behalf, since he's our constitutional officer, saying we're not going to use the state system anymore. We're going to bring it back under local control. We're going to use our own clean voter rolls, and we're going to manage our own elections. Thank you very much. That's what I'm doing. And it's not just one county. We're going to have about half a dozen counties stand up at the same time and do that. That's why I'm in Oregon now. I give public talks. Yes, that's important because we're educating the public. But really, behind the scenes, I spend almost every day with the locals, teaching them and helping them find fraud in their own elections, because that's what gives them the standing to say we will not comply.
We don't have a whole lot of time for that. I have to have you back to cover all seven. Can you give us one example of what maybe people at home can be doing to help find fraud?
Well, I do that by starting with the voter rolls, and I take I typically take five copies of the voter rolls for the last 5 years, and there's a whole topic we have to get in for me to explain that. But your voter rolls are basically being churned; they're adding and removing huge percentage of the voters. Would you be surprised to learn that your rolls have changed 50% in the last 4 years? That's the average for your state, 50%. Crook County, for example, their rolls have changed 70%. They're a small red county towards the center of the state. And 30% of the people who voted in the 2020 election have been removed. So the first thing I do is give them copies of their rolls, show how they're churning. They're like, this isn't real. This isn't really happening. And then we examine that churn and find the fraud in that. And so local people need to do is they need to form a team. And that's what my 7 steps teaches you how to do that. It teaches you how to, I don't charge for any of this, by the way. So I'm not selling you something. I've been doing this around the country, so I have refined the strategy. I teach that strategy. We form a team, we find the fraud, and then we educate our county leaders and our sheriff, and build a movement. You notice that Trump put a tweet up about a week ago saying he's going to start a movement around the country against mail-in voting.
Yes.
Okay, but he said the key words: "I'm going to lead a movement." He said. That's what I've been teaching people to do, how to start a movement in your own county. Yeah. So what can local people do? Help form a movement in your county. That's what we need to do. We need to do it right now in Oregon. This is like the time.
So real quick, we've only got about a minute here with you. In a previous interview, we had talked with Judicial Watch about their lawsuit. I saw your presentation, and then I contacted Eric, who's on that team, and told him about what you had uncovered, is that they're churning these voter rolls. You mentioned that you're working with Judicial Watch. Is that what you're advising them on?
In fact, today I was on the phone with Eric on a Zoom call showing him that they were completely unaware of this. And the reason is not because they're incompetent. They're competent attorneys.
Oh, absolutely.
Their focus is on the state's non-compliance with NVRA. But I was giving them evidence and facts related to that. So for example, a county may not report how many people were removed from the rolls. I can give them the list of the names who were removed. Mm. And I can give them all the backup data for any of the claims they need to make, in other words. So that's where I come in my connection with them.
Because that was one of the processes that we talked with Eric about, you know, what are they looking for under discovery? I think with that new information that you gave them, that may really change and impact what they are looking for in discovery and maybe open up some new ideas and new avenues to explore. If that's the case, depending on what they find, that may expose what's happening in other states as well. And that's pretty exciting. All right. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock. Dr. Douglas Frank, I want to thank you so much for your time today. We are definitely going to have you back.
I'd be delighted. Thanks for having me.
On today's show page, which you can find at ispyradio.com/15-36, we'll have a link to a recent Dr. Frank presentation in Clackamas County so you can understand a bit more about some of what he has uncovered and how the state is churning the voter rolls. If that's true, that is absolutely damning. We will have Dr. Frank back on to talk about that in more depth in a future show. In that presentation, he also talks about something that we just ran out of time to get back to, the ERIC voting system, the Electronic Registration Information Center. According to Dr. Frank, because ERIC is an NGO, you can't file a Freedom of Information Act against them to pry them open to see what they are actually doing. With USAID and everything that was uncovered there, I think it is high time that we start re-examining laws governing NGOs and nonprofits. There are a lot of evil things hidden behind that veil of secrecy under the guise of doing good. Check out that presentation and other resources as well. Again, that is ispyradio.com/15-36. Be sure to share that as well, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.